Mr. Chadwick, Real 18. We're talking about your time with 1st Battalion, King's Own Yorkshire Light Infantry in Malaya. And we're looking at when you'd come out of the line, say, after a patrol, and for the first, that day, they'd be treated well.
As well as
good. Now, what would happen then? What was the routine when you were out of the line, when you were doing these?
Well, the company commander then would designate another platoon to more or less take over the role that we'd been doing, the patrolling at another area. Excuse me. Where humanly possible, for 4 or 5 days up to a week, given as good a time as we could, arrange trips back to the company headquarters to get proper showers and meet some of the mates. Have a drink in the company headquarters canteen.
And the company headquarters would be?
A few miles back of Cooling. Be 8-10 miles away. 12 miles maybe. Maybe a little bit more in service. Give them breaks out. If I got an invite out to the planter, take 2 or 3 of them up there for a meal and try and rehabilitate them to a little bit of a good life. And then a local village, if we knew it was pretty secure to liaise with the police and talking, they'd go into the village at night and get a curry. Carry the weapons with them. But give them as much enjoyment as we can.
Well, where would they get the curry from? Do you see what I mean?
A local calf.
They had calf.
That calf is in the village. Now, we're more civilised. We're not on the counties, the one house, the small villages. There were quite a lot of the names, but they were irrelevant. But that was if you were fortunate to be in an area like that. But arrange an inter-platoon football match with our other platoons.
When they went for a curry, I mean, did you and the men like curry?
Yeah. And it did cool you down, that curry they made, because it was hot. And I never liked curry until I went to the Paris. And after that, any chance I got, I'd be out for a curry.
And so, now the other thing was sport, you were mentioning.
Very low level, but I used to put a good emphasis on it. I used to take the PT, not PT instructors, just arms backward bend, but keep them on the toes. Basketball, come rugby. As long as we're running around, keeping fit. But we do the old peace time habit, if it was possible. After lunch, in bed or out about, go and have a lie down and a rest. Well, they play cards. Out of the sun. Get in the hoochies and have a game of cards and a trim one. And in general, get a little rest. And then, at the end of the week, you have a little ball group and say, well, boys, we've had a break. We're back on the patrol routine.
Now, would that be straight back into the jungle patrols, or would you be doing some more familiarisation patrols?
Local ones.
Or local, yeah.
Or, as I say, for all this time, you've got to remember, planters are still being shot. I went to a planter's bungalow with a patrol of about 10 men. I think his name was Mr. Ramson. I believe he was a multimillionaire. He was a character. And you won't credit us. You won't credit it. I said, well, look, sir. I'm sorry, I'm going to sleep in this bungalow. He says, no chance. No chance of you sleeping here. No, I don't want you. I think the world of you boys. They're not frightening me. A lot more dialogue. So I gave way. I said, well, sleep under the steps. Under the bungalow. Because they were all stated. Come next morning, we had a patrol up. They were just a picket. And we'd have a cigarette and have a walking round. Got up next morning, he's dead. Well, we know what exactly what had happened. Well, it was staff that killed him. Now, you couldn't account for that. We didn't know what to do. There was nobody got in. But one of his staff was missing. He'd gone to join the band. He killed him. So you technically know you couldn't you could never really relax.
So besides going the long distance patrol, they're not long distance, but in the jungle patrols, you were still all the duties of looking after
the
planters.
For protection.
Would your platoon be split up then? Because I mean,
no, we weren't big enough to be split up to that level. It was getting a little less, but in view of the fact that I explained earlier. The Palestine police were now coming out, or had come out in numbers. The Malayan Constabulary had done a lot of recruiting, and they were taking over these mundane duties.
They were taking over the planters.
Running the plantations. They weren't as good as British troops, which was understandable. But they were getting better and better every day as time went by. But they, planters preferred to see us go up there than eight Malays lads, although these lads were all right. And at this stage, they initiated these, what I call the Mickey Mouse soldiers. They brought in the E-bands. These were the Borneo headhunters. Well, one day a truck arrived with an interpreter and three headhunters. And they all had the swords with the human hair hanging off, heads locked up. Tattooed from top to bottom. And that doesn't mean a thing. So I said to him, I've been told I was getting them for tracking in the jungle. Now they couldn't speak a word. Well, to me, they were just like Mickey Mouse. I took them out once, and they were making all kinds of signs. Things like this, the hands found out, I later found out were tiger footprints or something, or elephant footprints, etc. And to me, with a disrespect, it was just a waste of time. And every time you got to a village, the sword was out, going to lop somebody's head off. So when I got back, I had a lot of harsh words on it. I said, greatest respect for these lads, but they're no use to me. If you can't talk, you can't fight. If you can't communicate, you can't fight. At man-to-man level and at army level. That's why I say they were bringing in the next campaign and the Mexican foreign troops. You're not operational with them. I gathered later, after I left, they formed E-band platoons. I'd go along with that, because they were all together, they all spoke the language, they did know the jungle. But I mean, the Sakais in the jungle would help you, the little pygmies. They would, by sign, that they could help you.
Would you meet them very often?
Oh, yeah, I used to meet them. I used to watch. They'd be lying there in the firing position, we watched it, about 10 of them. Men, women, all little pygmies. With the blowpipes, you know, on the e-pole, on the guards. Some were a bit more friendly than others, but invariably, they never spoke. Just walk past it. You say, hey, the pigmies are coming. You see them coming up. Never speak, but walk straight past it. Straight into the bush, where they lived, and I don't. But these wandering, Not all over the place.
Would there be in the deep jungle?
What?
Would there be in the deep jungle?
Deep jungle. Never came out. Never came to the region or anything like that. Didn't no growing on. Like they just skinned it. Something like that. It was sight to see, actually. Once, I got one to show me. We persuaded him. I think one of the last games or something. But it usually blow by. It was incredible. The direction, the accuracy of that man, he killed a bird, called it. And the darts that were ticked in e-ball from the e-ball tree, poison. And the bird just fell straight out the tree. Smile. Up and off. But it was incredible. I actually witnessed it. I thought there was a lot of palaver with his blow by, but man, I think the real accuracy was fantastic. It really was.
Now, anything else, any incidents you remember? There was one big incident which we're going to come on to on 11th of January 1949. When you, but before then, are there any other incidents from patrolling or contacts with that come to mind?
We did a company job. My team was involved. And we were designated to attack the county. And I was very brave that day, you say, and I'm not a brave man. The company manager said, you're going to put the attacking on that basher. They call them bashers. How many men? I think it was 10. Me and 10.
This was on a
company, a big company exercise.
Not actually into the deep jungle, then?
No, no. But, you know, half and half.
And this was a guerrilla camp?
Guerrilla camp.
Was it...
It was manned pretty heavily. And we were going in first. And it was, I'd say, 70 yards up this track. Well, you know, three young Marys, and right, are we ready, lads? So, the company commander said, look, we're listening to you. There's nobody in there. So, look. We got brave. So, we set off the track, but they were in there. And they opened up, and we went to ground. And it came one. But as I've said previously, they realised there was a force there. And all that they did, they had all the tracks ready. They knew exactly they were off. But we got one. And the only reason I found that Irish that bashed the door inside of him, which didn't need much bashing. And he was led there. We hit him. Purely luck. More luck than anything. But the rest of the floor. Then we fired the old red over green and the troops moved in then follow-up troops.
Would they ever try and surround a camp before attacking, on the principle that when they ran out they'd get them?
Well, this is where the ambushes came. They'd lay ambushes, they'd do an enormous amount of planning. But as you can understand, sometimes the terrain didn't help you at all. And they weren't pros at jungle warfare. They've been doing it since 1941, living out there. They knew that area. You see, the Manners was in the Gunung Bangso area. They knew it backwards. The people in Pila, all further down the mainland, they all knew their own areas, right at the back of the land, and they could disappear. But they'd split up, they wouldn't stay together, and they'd argue at a given point and team up again. They knew it backwards. That was a great advantage they had.
Any other incidents you remember?
Well, there was numerous of that nature. say we lost men. I was pretty fortunate, touch wood, on men wounded.
How would you get men wounded?
Well, they're bailing out. They turn around and let fly again with a machine gun or whatever. And something of interest there, we found out that the ex-MPATA men, or MP presented Japanese Army, they had all the weapons that had been given to them during the war when they were fighting for us. But as you know, with weapons, you need oil and lubricants. And we found out that the finest oil that the bandits used on the LMGs was Brilcream. And it worked wonderful. Brilcream. Now, it was incredible. Of course, it wouldn't have worked in Europe because the climate, the cold and damp. I don't think Brilcream would have been as operative or as efficient. But it wouldn't. But out there in the heat, it worked wonderful.
So would you use it then, when you found that out?
No, we had a zone on it. You couldn't better that. But they couldn't get hold of the oil.
So the Brilcream wasn't better than the proper stuff, but it was the best.
It was the best alternative under the circumstances. You know, it was incredible. And of course, a lot of them had, not only when we killed the Atlantis, they took the shotguns. And they're a nasty weapon. Because they're defilled, you know, when the police come over there, they cover quite an area. And they were armed with everything. They weren't short of weapons at all.
And they were, well, pretty well the same weapons as you were then.
Oh, yeah.
Would they have Stens?
No, I never saw anybody with a Sten gun.
Now, one thing about this is that, again, I'm using, I don't know much about the Malayan campaign, but I've got this book here by Skur. He's saying that there was a question about the effectiveness of submachine guns, saying they would only bring the enemy down if hitting a vital organ, and that the Bren and things were better, and shotguns and things like this. Well, I mean, were you aware of this, or were you happy with the performance of the Sten?
I don't know who's written that book, but I don't think he served there. For a start off, we've already discussed the heat, the condition of the troops, and if he's ever carried a Bren gun for 2 hours in the jungle, he'll know what he's got on his back in his hard work. It fires at such a high rate, it's hard work carrying a lot of ammunition. So you've got to be practical and sensible and look at the physical side of the soldier as well as the mechanical side. A Bren gun can fire effectively 700, 800, 900 yards. No use to me in the jungle. I want a close quarter weapon that can fire 50 yards. That'll do me, because I'm not going to be shooting at anybody further than 50 yards. So I want close quarter weapons for close quarter fighting. And Bren guns answered. If you went out with a company, you would take a Bren gun. The particular incident that we had no Bren gun.
Was the Sten's stopping power sufficient for you?
Well, I ask you, it's a 9mm shell. I don't want one. And we wouldn't use it in World War II if it didn't kill people. Certainly, I mean, I don't know who that gentleman is, but I beg to differ with him.
Only asking. Now, the next, are there any other incidents you recall before the successful action you fought?
Not with embassy, maybe you can show you.
What?
I don't know, plan to shot himself.
Why?
We saw him, and a couple of days later, were saying the truth, but it wasn't actually taking his own life. The saddest one, the one I related earlier, the team mine manager, wonderful gentleman, I went down. We often said the reason he died was inviting us to his house. You see, you never knew where they were. By day they were walking about, by night they were donning the uniform, as it were. He invited us up there, gave us a lovely meal, we had a few men outside, gave us a lovely party. So I'm not sure, 2 or 3 days later, the word came to my patrol to get out there. He was the first person I saw. Both his legs were joggled.
What do you mean, joggled?
They did it with iron bars. They went flat up and down. Whether it was done before him because he was riddled, they riddled him, stood over him. And the legs were shaped like that. The arms had been held out like that, mate, with a bar there. But, and then, I can't remember how many were dead. The 3 or 4 of his staff were lying there, smashed to stubbles. Terrible sight. It was put down by virtue of the fact that, well, we thought they'd soon us go up that night, so he's liaison with us. So they said, right, we'll rub him out, as it were. One of the saddest things I saw in that event.
Now, let's move on then to it's your action on the 11th of January 1949. Says it's Sergeant Chadwick and just 4 other ranks of 11 platoon. Was it 11 platoons? What did you think? What platoon would you? You said 7 earlier. So, what do you remember? What could you set the scene for us? What were you doing there? What?
It was in the elephant grass near the Sonic Commandant, and we'd called. We knew that there was some in the area. We knew they were there. We'd heard about this lot. We called them to Conksy, and
so why were there only there were just 4 of you? Well, 5.
We're just going out to let everybody know where we're.
And where were the rest of the platoon?
Back at base. All back at base. You know, the corps was looking after them and wet and clean. And
do you remember who the lads were who were with you now?
You know, I forgot their name. There was Mush Mundy. And Abby Matty. First person to fire was Abbey.
So, where exactly were you when you...
We were on the banks of the Sungikarangan, just outside, Cleeter or some place, I forget the name of the place. And Abbey spotted something. We all went down. Abbey looked up. And he realised then it was a patrol. So he fired. Then they returned fire, we returned fire. And a bit of manoeuvring and a bit of messing around there.
Could you take us through it? As you remember it.
Well, they threw some grenades at us. And what I did, Mush Mundy had a rifle. And we used to put 1 in 3 tracer. I told Mush to fire across the river at the elephant grass and set fire to it. That cut their method of withdrawing. It cut their method of escape off. So I knew they couldn't get back that way. We held them down and they'd taken cover.
It says you had difficulty locating an adequate target due to their superior cover.
Well, they were hiding, you see. One of them popped up with a gun. Because as soon as they moved, we all fired. I was giving the orders. As soon as anything moves, shoot at him. We knocked him off. And then the others, we let two of the crest engage in them. When they could see enough, keep the heads down for us to creep along the bank of the river, come up and finish him.
They were on the same side of the river as you?
Oh, yeah.
So you got close to them. What happened then? You got round. You outflanked them.
We went round, left flanking, into the dead ground on the riverbank, which was dead. And these two are keeping them engaged, firing at them. So we went round and then. There's something I'd really like to say about this. I think these are the most important words I'll say of all the interview. And I've always wanted to say this. People in the army, when they were talking, somebody might come along and say, oh, do you know where chap who got the Durham's there? Oh, it was from the MN. Huh? That's him, yeah. Well, that's where they do talk. I did win an MN. We did. I found that 70-80% of awards are given for similar actions. The reason I awarded, and I'm proud to do on their behalf, was we got it for what we did that day. Not what I did. Okay, I was in charge. I hope I did a good job within the surveillance because we didn't get a man wounded. But I was given the reward. Now, everybody will go, I chatted, he won the MM in the lair one day. You don't, in my room. Well, going back to it, I must tell you a little incident which was laughable.